getting close to our time with Oregon Center for Public Policy, and I thought I would play a prequel to the interview. And this is sort of this is a song that contains an issue that will be discussed during the interview at some point. So here we go.
I got gambling. I got gambling on my mind. I got gambling. I got gambling on my mind. Well, I hates to leave my baby, but Spirit Mountain's a 3-hour drive. Well, I'm addicted. I am drunk, poor, out of luck. I'm losing money, so the rich can save a buck. Well, my kids are hungry, and the state wins their money for lunch. Well, video poker, I'm gonna win that game someday, yeah. And the casinos, with their sacred Indian ways. Well, they finally got the white man, and they're really gonna make him pay. Well, cut education. Why risk the future that way? Promote addiction. Raising money the American way. So we can build more prisons and lock a generation away. Gotta throw away that key. When our leading jobs are in gambling, fast food, and jail.
All right. And that was Gambling by Salem's own Dr. Atomic's Medicine Show. And it's time now for our Fourth Friday Focus with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. And you can always go to occpp.org and you can read up on all of the studies that Oregon Center for Public Policy does. They do a lot of work on government taxation, education, healthcare, and more, and always with a local focus. And today's interview is with Juan Carlos Ordonez. And he's a Harvard Law grad and a lawyer who's worked in commercial litigation, has worked in his native Guatemala on civic projects towards sustainable development of indigenous communities, freelance journalist for many years in Spanish and English publications, and has been with the Oregon Center for Public Policy since about 2007. Juan Carlos, are you with us?
Yes. Hi, Mark. Great to be on the show again.
Yes, it is great to have you. And so you've been, just a little, as a personal note, you've been with OCPP since 2007. And what various roles have you played with the organization?
Well, I'm the communications director for the organization. So I get to have the pleasure of speaking to members of the media like yourself, and also with Oregonians across the state, visiting communities, and also helping put together all the publications that we put out the door. So it's quite interesting and enjoyable work.
Yes, indeed. And so you must have, I don't think we've actually talked about this in the past, a pretty good sense of the history of the organization. Could you just give us a real brief history of the Oregon Center for Public Policy?
Sure. In the 1990s, a lot of human service advocates sort of started realizing that to be more effective in the work that they do, that they really needed to have reliable and accurate and timely data and analysis of what was going of the issues that they were debating in Salem and ways of how they could improve the situation for low and moderate income Oregonians. So they decided to create the Oregon Center for Public Policy. And so since then, we've become sort of the go-to place for accurate data and analysis on tax and budget issues, especially. That's sort of our bread and butter. But other issues as well, healthcare policy, issues of the Oregon economy. And so we collaborate with a whole host of advocacy organizations or service organizations in Oregon. We help them. We provide to them the analysis that they need to do their work.
Great. Well, thanks. And in the end of June, you folks published a pretty major paper, actually. It's quite lengthy and detailed on corporate taxation, and looks like you were a big part of that. And so give us a little bit of a background of maybe why you decided to do this analysis, and then maybe we can get into some of the thoughts about it and the results.
Sure. Well, corporate taxes in Oregon have been in the headlines quite a bit in the past few months, and will continue to be through November, since we are now starting to have a corporate tax measure on the ballot, what would really be a game changer in terms of Oregon tax policy. This measure would raise taxes on very large, mainly out-of-state corporations. So since there's so much discussion going on corporate taxes, we thought it would be a good time to provide Oregonians context in terms of what's been happening with corporate taxes over the long term, sort of looking at the long-term trends of corporate taxes in our state. And to help put that measure in context, but also just simply for Oregonians to better understand their tax system and what's been happening.
Well, certainly if you, read or listen to the current news and read editorials and things like that, it sounds like just Oregon is just this incredibly tax-burdened state for corporations, and why would they even want to come here?
Well, quite the opposite.
Oh, my gosh.
In our paper, what we've seen over the past few decades since the 1970s or late 1970s is a long-term decline in corporate taxes here in our state, both in terms of the income tax, which are the taxes collected by the state of Oregon, and property taxes, which are collected at the local level. So in both in terms of the corporate income tax and the corporate property taxes, we've seen a long-term decline over the years. To such an extent that if you add up all the business taxes collected here in our state, we end up being dead last in terms of business taxes and business corporate taxes being part of those business taxes.
Wow, dead last. So we actually have the lowest amount of taxation of business essentially in the country.
Yes, that's according to a couple of different studies, one of them funded by corporations themselves, actually. But yes, a couple of recent studies have that's their conclusion. And that's only one way of looking at the long-term decline of corporate taxes here in Oregon. Another way of looking at it is if you consider corporate income taxes collected by corporate income taxes as a share of the Oregon economy. And since the late 1970s, what we've seen is that corporate taxes have declined by more than half by that measure. And there's different ways of looking at it also.
Sure.
If you look at it from the perspective of all the income taxes collected by the state of Oregon, we have the personal income tax, which is the biggest source of funding for our state, and also the corporate income tax. If you combine those two together, the corporate share has been declining for quite some time now. It used to be in the mid-1970s, corporations paid about 18.5% of all income taxes collected in Oregon. And today, that contribution has shrunk to about 6.7%. So it's a decline of nearly two-thirds over those decades.
And I also noticed in your study that if you project that forward, if no changes are made, the Revenue Department has suggested that would drop even further.
That's right. By the mid-1920s, in the next decade, we will see, the projection is it will have shrunk to about 4.6%. So, yeah, if nothing happens to change the structure here, the corporate contribution will continue to decline.
Now, do you think that this shift now away from corporate taxation? Generally, if we're going to pay for government, then obviously the burden has to fall upon individuals.
Two things can happen. One, as you say, the load is shifted onto someone else, individuals and families, and small businesses. And one example of sort of the most egregious things that we point out in our report is that as the corporate income tax has declined, we saw the rise of the Oregon Lottery, which is it's a relatively new source of revenue for a state. It didn't come into being until the mid-1980s. But since that time, the Oregon Lottery has eclipsed the corporate income tax as a source of revenue for a state. And we know that the lottery is in some ways a tax on low-income people.
Sure.
And on people facing, a gambling addiction. So to some extent, the decline of the corporate income tax has been shifted onto the shoulders of those least able to carry it.
Well,
yes, there is definitely a shift from for paying for public services that everyone uses away from corporations onto individuals and families. But also we simply see the fact that our state and local governments are not able to keep up our public services, our schools, for example, to the level of funding where they ought to be. So there's a shifting of the tax load as well as simply an erosion of our public services.
Now, this when the lottery started, that was sort of, my thought. It seems that was one of the most ingenious ways to shift the tax burden from folks who had money to folks who had less money. It seemed like the lottery was one of the best ways to get people to want to make that shift for themselves.
They have proven to be very popular, the lottery, and it has grown over the years. But in terms of across the states, more states adopting it, and it seems to be a way that that policymakers can avoid directly raising taxes on corporations or on someone else.
So a
lottery doesn't carry the name tax on it, but it effectively functions as a tax.
It sure does, especially when it involves things like, addiction and false hopes and things like that.
Yes. So the sad thing is that it's low income people and people with a gambling addiction who tend to play the lottery the most and are the biggest sources of revenue for the lottery.
Now, do you think, and this wasn't actually discussed in your report, but I'm sure you guys have looked at this, one of the big criticisms of the Oregon tax system is, by many, is that we don't have a sales tax. And what do you think about a sales tax in terms of addressing this sort of changing distribution of the burden of taxes?
Well, sales taxes, by their very nature, are regressive. They hit low and moderate income people much harder than they do people at the top. Certainly, sales taxes have the potential of bringing in a lot of revenue, but they do come with that fact that that they are asking more of those at the bottom than at the top. So in that respect, we don't favor a sales tax. And the funny thing about when people talk about the opposite, those who are opposed to the current corporate tax measure, is that the same people who have been calling for a sales tax for years are now trying to label this corporate tax measure as a sales tax. Which goes to show that it's not a sales tax.
Very interesting. So we've not only now on have corporations been reducing their burden and share in proportion of our income taxes, but corporations also pay property taxes. And, even before we get to that, a lot of corporations have been able to, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that, because we have a minimum tax in Oregon, and corporations aren't paying that, and I'm not exactly sure why that's the case. And of course, we've got many corporations who have hundreds of millions in profits that pay actually zero.
Yeah, you know, and the title of our report is called The Gaming and Decline of Oregon Corporate Taxes. So we've talked about the decline of certainly the income tax, but we can also talk about the gaming of the corporate income tax.
And yeah, let's do that.
You know, and, you know, by that we mean, you know, the corporations have found ways to manipulate the system to find ways to avoid, to shirk their tax responsibility. So one of the ways in which they have done so is by putting into the tax code a bunch of tax loopholes and subsidies that have whittled away at their tax contributions. And so in Oregon, for example, we see that, you know, back in 1980, there were eight corporate income tax breaks, or nine, I'm sorry, corporate income tax breaks on the books before 1980. And today, we have 51. And 24 of those tax breaks have been created since 2001. So there's been, you know, an explosion of corporate tax subsidies and loopholes over the years.
Now, this is in...
One of those...
Oh, go ahead. I mean, this is in Oregon.
Yeah, no, and one of those tax loopholes, yeah. In essence, allowed corporations to avoid Oregon's minimum tax. It was actually the result of an Oregon Supreme Court decision that allowed corporations to do an end run around the corporate minimum tax, such that in recent years, there were corporations that had, you know, sometimes millions in profits here in Oregon, but paid zero in taxes.
Wow. Well, one of those examples is a very profitable country company. One of the most profitable companies in the country is Intel.
Yeah, and you know, Intel is one of the biggest companies, probably the biggest company here in our state. And they used to be quite a good good corporate citizen in terms of paying corporate income taxes in Oregon. They used to boast of how much they would contribute each year, and it was quite substantial. But this was back in the early 90s. But since then, they no longer talk about that. And part of the reason is because we suspect that they're paying probably the minimum as a result of changes that have been made to the Oregon tax code, a very very favorable provisions that were put in place that have benefited companies like Intel.
Wow. And it says here 71 corporations paid nothing in income taxes in 2013. They had Oregon profits of at least $500,000.
Yeah, that's right. And many more had huge amounts of sales in Oregon, but were perhaps paying just the minimum tax, which is fairly modest. So there's many ways to looking at it. But the bottom line is that a lot of corporations here in Oregon, and actually nationwide, basically pay very little in terms of state income taxes.
So some of this is the responsibility of Oregon legislature passing some tax loopholes, but also the federal, if you change the federal tax law, then you come in perhaps with a lower taxable income than you might otherwise, which has also contributed to the drop in state income taxes?
That's right. So Oregon follows the federal definition of taxable income. So if corporations go to Congress and lobby for a change to the tax code, in other words, put in a tax break that affects the definition of taxable income, Oregon adopts that change automatically. I mean, Oregon could sort of opt out, but typically doesn't. So that becomes part of the Oregon tax code as well, and ends up reducing the amount of income taxes that the affected corporations would pay here in Oregon.
Wow. Well, let's move on to property taxes. Tell us a little bit about the history of corporations and individuals paying their property taxes.
Yeah, the listeners may recall Measures 5 and Measures 50, which were enacted in the 1990s. These measures ushered in dramatic changes to our property tax system. Our Oregon's property tax system right now is a bit of a mess, and it brings in a lot less money than it used to. Now, property taxes, I think it's important to stress, is the main way that local governments fund local services. And the property tax is also the second biggest way we fund our public schools here in Oregon. So in the 1990s, there were dramatic changes to our property tax system. And, you know, first came Measure 5 in 1990, which slashed property taxes, including the property taxes paid by corporations. And then in 1997, Measure 50 came around, which locked in property tax taxes at a time when commercial property was pretty inexpensive relative to residential property. So the bottom line is that corporations, to some extent, as a result of history, got locked in at very low property tax rates. It was an advantageous moment for them to be locked in such with such property tax rates. And so there's been a big decline in the property tax contribution by corporations over the years, by businesses generally, but corporations as well. And so part of it, it's part of the big decline in the corporate contributions in terms of property taxes is sort of as a result of history. But part of it is also the way corporations have also gamed the property tax system. They have gone to the state legislature and to local governments and lobbied for and won property tax breaks.
Wow. So it's sometimes hard when the residents, you know, see their property taxes being held down to say there's anything wrong with the property tax system at the moment. And help me explain or understand one of these points that you made when you were talking about the corporate property taxes being locked in at a time of low valuation of business property relative to residential property. And that sort of would be the tax base. And then you'd have your tax rate applied to that base. So when corporate property valuation rose relative to individual and residential properties, wouldn't that cause a pretty good increase in the property taxes collected by corporations, or did they actually have their rates reduced as well?
What happened is, well, first Measure 5 reduced property tax rates. Then Measure 97 separated property taxes away from market value.
Ah, okay.
Of the property into what is called assessed value, and so it's an artificial definition of rather than, you know, it's no longer based on what the property is actually valued at, but rather this assessed value, and based on from a specific date, from I think it was 1997 or 1998, the starting point for this assessed value, and it was at that time when commercial property was at a depressed price relative to residential property. So in some ways it was an accident of history, but that assessed value got the starting point was at a time when commercial property was underpriced.
And then following that, didn't they put limits on the amount the assessed value could grow, so that it would, by nature, grow slower than the actual market value of that property?
Yeah, well, the Measure 97 put in that it grows. I believe it's at a 3% rate.
I think that's right.
I don't have that figuring exactly in front of me, but it grows by a certain formula. So it's separated from the actual value of the property.
So then I would assume if you looked at the relationship between market value and assessed value in the mid-90s, those would be a lot closer than they are today.
That's right. Yeah. Well, there was a discount. I believe the initial assessed value, I think it was 10% lower than the market value at that time, and then it got locked in. But since then, there's been a divergence in terms of assessed value and market value.
Very interesting. So we come down to what kind of we've set the table here and made it sound pretty clear that Oregon is, and one of the things when businesses locate and make their decisions of where, to do their business and stuff, where on the list does local taxes fall in terms of importance and priority for business location and business activity?
They rank pretty low if they appear on the list at all. We know from both the research, but also from what CEOs sometimes let us know, that from their statements as well, that state taxes and taxes generally matter very little in terms of where businesses choose to locate. There's things that are far more important than taxes in terms of making that decision, like, are there good schools for our that we want to have our employees, where we can attract good employees or good public services? Where are our customers based? Where are, is there a good transportation system that we can get our goods in and out? Where are our suppliers? Things like that matter a lot more than taxes, which are a pretty small portion of the cost of doing business.
Sure. So it seems to be also then that some of those things that you mentioned that corporations look to locate are actually public services that require taxation for those services to be of high quality and of value to business.
Yeah, corporations definitely benefit from good public services, from having good schools that will then lead to, well-trained employees, employees that have good skills, of having quality public colleges and universities, of having a well-maintained public infrastructure, a whole host of things. And so corporations definitely benefit. Of course, Oregon communities, in order to thrive, they need, well-funded schools and other good public services. You know, these are public services that benefit everyone, not just a privileged few. They benefit everyone, including corporations. So it's in everyone's interest of having, quality public services. And by shirking their tax responsibilities, corporations undermine that. They make it harder to pay for these public services that benefit everyone.
And this sounds like a case of, to me anyways, like we do it not because we need to, but because we can. Because, I mean, it just seems like if our legislature and policymakers decided it wasn't going to be that way, corporations would most likely pony up and not leave based on everything you've just said.
That's right. I mean, it's certainly up to the Oregon legislature or Oregon voters to put in place the rules of the road. And over the years, we've seen that the corporations have been very successful at getting the legislature to put in to reduce their tax contributions by putting in place tax breaks and whatnot. So, the legislature can also go in the opposite direction and close some of these loopholes and make corporations pay again. Or if not, Oregon voters can also themselves choose to raise taxes on corporations, as they will be deciding come November. But it's certainly up to us to change the rules. And the reality is that, if corporate taxes were to go up, we know from history that it won't affect of where corporations having corporations come and locate in Oregon. In 2010, Oregon voters put in a modest increase to the corporate minimum tax, and at that time there were howls from the business community that this was going to drive away businesses. But at the end of the day, after voters raised the corporate minimum tax, no one could find a corporation that left. And in fact, there were businesses coming into Oregon and locating here. And one other thing to note on, the corporate tax proposal that's going to be on the ballot, what it's based on the amount of sales in Oregon. You have to be affected. You have to have over $25 million in sales in Oregon, and you only pay on the amount above $25 million. And where the company is located has absolutely nothing to do with whether they will be affected by this tax. So they can have their production facility, in Nevada and headquarters somewhere else outside of Oregon. But what matters is whether they're the amount of sales in Oregon. So certainly this corporate tax measure won't have any impact on corporations coming or going to Oregon.
And we're, of course, talking about IP 28.
IP 28, Initiative Petition 28, now it has a ballot title.
And, oh, okay.
And it's Ballot Measure 97.
Ballot Measure 97. Okay, that's something I've learned today. So we've got an official ballot title. So there was a study that was recently published in the Statesman Journal by the organization called the Tax Foundation. And I don't know a lot of those folks, but they are running up a red flag saying that this is going to increase consumer prices as much as 2% in Oregon. And what do you think of that?
Well, I think that's really, really misleading. You know, the reality is that the Measure 97 affects the largest corporations in our state. Again, you have to have sales over $25 million to be impacted. And you also have to be what's called a C corporation. So only certain types of corporations. Most of these corporations are headquartered outside of Oregon, and so it's a relatively small slice of the businesses that do business in Oregon that are going to be affected. And it won't be easy necessarily for corporations to pass on this tax on to consumers, which is what the opponents argue, simply because of the fact that they're going to face competition, both from other businesses in Oregon that are not affected, the many businesses that are not affected, as well as say online retailers that can sell the same product at a lower price. So that competition will keep prices in check. And there's also other ways that this tax will be paid by people outside of Oregon. So we know, for example, that corporate taxes can be deducted from Oregon corporate income taxes can be deducted from federal tax returns. So some of this tax is going to be paid by the federal government in lower tax receipts by the federal government. And some of it will be paid by consumers outside of Oregon. There's a lot of companies, again, we're talking about multi-state corporations that are going to be affected, sort of national retailers. You can find a can of beans, in Oregon for the same price as a can of beans in Texas or in Nevada. And that's simply the result that a lot of these companies follow a national pricing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So the relatively small increase in taxes for these companies, it's relatively small, will be just simply spread out nationwide. So there's really definitely good reasons to believe that, that this is going to be not paid by Oregonians. Another thing is that some of it will just be paid by the shareholders, by the owners of the corporation itself, in terms of slightly lower profits, to the extent that they're going to face competition and have to keep prices in check.
Now, one type of corporation that looks like might be missed with ballot measure 97. Is that right? 97.
97, right.
Yeah, I got to say that a couple times. It sticks in my head. there was a change in the way corporate taxes were calculated in Oregon a while back. Most states go to a sort of a three-legged formula that talks about their proportion of sales, their proportion of property, and their proportion of payroll activity within the state, and use that as a basis to look at the total company revenues and form taxation policy on that. But in Oregon, they changed that, and they've dropped property and payroll so that it's only based on sales. Now, wouldn't this allow corporations that are maybe headquartered here but don't have very many sales in Oregon, but their sales are somewhere else, wouldn't that allow them to sort of escape local taxation?
Well, they will still be subject to the corporate minimum tax and a tax on profits. So the Measure 97 is a change to Oregon's minimum tax, but there's still a tax on profits. And so if the tax if under the formula for paying taxes based on profits, it's higher, that's the tax that they will pay. But you're right in that Measure 97 is very likely not going to touch some of the biggest corporations located here in Oregon. So, for example, Intel is probably a good example. We don't know for sure since we don't have access to their tax returns. But, you know, we suspect that they probably won't be affected by Measure 97 simply because they sell most of their products, the chips that they manufacture, outside of Oregon. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't be, you know, they probably don't have in-state sales of over $25 million. So they probably are not affected. And there's other corporations that have, who may have their manufacturing base here in Oregon, headquarters here in Oregon, but if they don't sell, but if most of the things that they sell, it's outside of Oregon, they won't be affected.
Sure. Well, this is interesting that in a time dominated by really a democratically led legislature and administration that we've had such a long period of a tax shift, a reduction in taxes on corporations, leaving the burden on the working people. And I was surprised to hear that about a democratically controlled legislature. And it makes Oregon seem a little less progressive than the reputation that it has. What are your prognosis for upcoming sessions and your prognosis for this ballot measure? And do you think that the legislature will work on some of your recommendations to close loopholes and raise corporate taxes?
Well, let me just say, you know, it's the corporations have been very successful at both the national level and pretty much across the country. Oregon is not unique in this respect in having seeing a decline of corporate income taxes. I mean, Oregon may be an extreme case. We haven't, you know, compared exactly to other states, but you know, but Oregon is not unique in having corporations put in place loopholes and subsidies. And frankly, it's been a bipartisan affair. I mean, you know, lawmakers from across the aisle have been have favored these tax subsidies and loopholes for quite some time now, over the decades. I believe that there is a growing recognition, though, among lawmakers that these are not really effective tools. They are often enacted under, you know, with the idea that they will spur companies to move into the state or will create new investments, you know, but the reality is that the research shows, and in fact, there's even legislative testimony showing that corporations wouldn't do anything different if they get a particular subsidy or not. It's really a non-factor in their decision making. And I think that lawmakers in Oregon are starting to recognize that and, in fact, ask tough questions when some of these tax breaks come up for renewal. We saw that in the last legislative session. So we're hopeful in that there's opportunities to close some of these tax loopholes in the coming session. And also we would like to see the Oregon legislature look seriously at the issue of enacting corporate tax disclosure. We think that the time has come to making public the tax returns or certain information in the tax returns of corporations so that Oregonians can understand how their tax system is working and why some corporations are paying so little. And some corporations are probably paying what they ought to be, so sort of also knowing which corporate actors are, you know, good corporate citizens and which ones are finding ways of avoiding taxes. And it would help us, having that information on hand would help us reform our tax system in a way that would work for Oregonians.
Juan Carlos Ordóñez from the Oregon Center for Public Policy, thank you so very much for stopping by and speaking with us. I really look forward to more conversations with you about things going on in Oregon. And that's Oregon Center for Public Policy, OCPP.org, because facts matter. One last point, I suppose, Oregon legislators and even voters considering ballot measure 97 could look to the experience of Kansas, who enacted tremendous tax cuts and found their state to be bankrupt.
Yes, Kansas is a good example of what a state ought not to do in terms of slashing taxes, including business taxes, and it's not a way to that leads to prosperity for sure. Kansas is hurting right now, and their schools are facing serious cuts in other public services as well. And it's I think a lot of people in Kansas have woken up to the reality that that starving the public sector is not the way to go.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We're going to go out with this interview with a cut from Peter Bigel and called A Whole Lot More Cooperation and a Lot Less Corporate Greed. Until next month, Juan Carlos Ordóñez, we'll talk to you again. Thank you so very much once again.
Thank you, Mark. It's been great. I look forward to the next opportunity.
And this report and many others can be found at OCPP.org, all prepared by the Oregon Center for Public Policy. And here we go.
Domination is all around us, taking shapes that are too many to name. Ooh, it's built right into our culture, and we've all got to share the blame.
We need love instead of profits, and we've got to make this our creed. We need a whole lot more cooperation and a lot less corporate greed.
We got to put away the carbon-based power. We got to put away the nuclear bomb. We got to figure how to feed the hungry, not blow the world to kingdom come.
We need love instead of profit, and we've got to make this our creed. We need a whole lot more cooperation and a lot less corporate greed.
I don't work for a big corporation. Won't let the fat cat steal my sweat. Well, the system doesn't work for poor folks, and I'm not about to work for it.
We need love instead of profits, and we've got to make this our creed. We need a whole lot more cooperation and a lot less corporate greed.
I got to protect our planet, 'cause it's the only one that we've got. We can't put poison into our water and make our air radioactively hot.
We need love instead of profits, and we've got to make this our creed. We need a whole lot more cooperation and a lot less corporate greed.
We need a whole lot more cooperation and a lot less corporate greed.